T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Last 6 months, terribly disruptive for millions of school-aged kids across the country. Not only did they have to transition to remote learning, but the sports leagues, the summer camps, the play dates, even the birthday parties, canceled. Now, with coronavirus cases spiking again, the kids face the prospects of yet another semester of Zoom classrooms and isolation.
The nation's pediatricians, they've come out with a strong statement in favor of bringing children back to the classroom this fall, wherever and whenever they can do so safely. Dr. Tanya Altman is a pediatrician practicing in Calabasas and national spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Doctor, thank you for joining us. So that seems to be the kind of interesting catchphrase: bring the kids back to the classroom wherever and whenever they can do so safely. Well, how do you determine that?
That's a good question, and thank you for having me on. You know, it's not a simple straight-line math problem here. Many factors come into play, and we know that school is so important for kids, even more than just math, reading, and science. They also learn social and emotional skills. Many kids get healthy meals there and exercise, mental health support, and other things that just cannot be provided with online learning. You know, we've been seeing across the country so many negative impacts of children because of the school closure. Now, that said, we don't want to put our nation's children at risk. So, you know, we're weighing the pros and the cons and trying to come up with safe ways to really get kids back in the classroom. And based on, you know, all the evidence that we have available, I do think that there are some really great strategies where we can have kids be physically present in school as much as possible.
Yeah, what does it look like? Is it everybody's spaced out? Do schools need to take over the gyms and have classrooms there, or get extra rooms, or keep the teachers as far away as possible in case somebody's infected?
Those are all, you know, great points, and there will be a lot of different guidelines that schools use. I think the important thing is that schools are flexible and that they have these plans that can really just turn on a dime, you know, if needed. So there's going to be strategies to decrease the virus getting on campus, and those may be health screening questionnaires or temperature checks. There will be strategies to decrease spread among students in the classroom. So for younger kids, it may be cohorting the kids into smaller groups without as much mixing or distancing. For older kids, mask use and having the desks 3 feet apart, you know, will play a role as well. I think your point about teachers is very important, as, you know, teachers are really generally in more of a high-risk category than a lot of our students. And so I think this is where we should focus a lot of efforts on, is protecting our teachers and administration. So they may need to be a little bit further away, masks and face shields when possible. And then also with the teacher lounges and places like that, that I think may need to move to a library or in the gym, as you mentioned, because they will need safe places to relax, do their work, that are spaced 6 to 10 feet away from other adults.
So what happens psychologically to these kids? I'm talking now about, you know, the younger ones, who for the next maybe year or two, maybe even longer, are going to have to be in classrooms with teachers wearing face shields and masks and maybe gloves. And at some point, that's all going to stop, I presume. And aren't they going to kind of wonder as they get older, how come people aren't wearing face shields and masks anymore?
Well, you know, I hope it stops soon. So hopefully that is a good issue that we have to deal with. I think kids are very resilient and flexible, and they get used to what they're seeing. I mean, I have kids in my office every day now wearing masks, staying a safe distance away, because that's what they've seen their parents do, and the parents are role modeling this behavior. And I think at the point where we are ready to, you know, get closer together, we're able to remove masks and remove some of these strategies, I think they will bounce back very quickly, and they won't really even notice the difference. They'll just be happy to be able to run around with their friends again on the playground. And I think it is going to be flexible, so there might be times where we're more strict because the numbers are going up, and then we kind of take a step back and relax a little bit, and then we have to now tighten up again, and now you guys need to go home and be online for 2 weeks while everybody, you know, is quarantined. Okay, now it's okay to come back. And I think we're all just going to have to learn to work together, the importance and the role of community in keeping each other safe and healthy, and not just physically safe but also mentally safe, is really something that we're all going to be working on over the next, you know, few months and maybe even few years. And in some ways, I think this could be a good lesson for all of us.
Dr. Tanya Altman, pediatrician practicing in Calabasas, national spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics.